My name is Moira Milner. I married Jerry Kelly 30-odd years ago, but I never changed my name because I had been Dr. Milner, I suppose, by then for nearly 10 years in the Rotunda, and it was just easier to keep my own name.
I suppose, like, even if you think of today's day and age, changing names, it's your identity, isn't it?
That's right. Well, even Brendan points out in his memoir that when he was a child in Corcuaguina in West Kerry in the 1940s, all of the Kerry women kept their maiden names. People were known by, you know, their own names. So people knew exactly who they were.
Yeah, yeah. And I suppose as well, there's so many surnames that are very alike, like O'Sullivan's and Murphy's and everything like that. So how do you distinguish them all?
Well, the pool was much smaller in those days. There was no Kislovskis or, you know, Sings. They were uniform, good old Irish names.
Maura, you co-wrote a memoir and you just had the launch. So tell us a bit about this memoir and what it's called.
It's called We've Come a Long Way. It's the double memoir of Brendan and Mary Kennedy, who emigrated separately in the 1951 to the UK and met there some years later and got married and had a family. So it's about their individual childhoods and their working lives. They worked for many, many years, both of them. So that's what it's all about.
So tell us, I suppose back then you had a lot of people, you know, emigrating between going over to the UK, going over to America and whatnot. But tell us a bit about their story before they had met. So they went out in what looks like a big, scary world in comparison
Absolutely.
To what you have here in Ireland.
We'll start with Mary because she actually had been sent away from her family. She came from a family of 10 and they lived in a, when I say 10 plus two parents. So they lived in a two-bedroom council house. And so things were very cramped and that was extremely common at the time. So she started to be sent away from her family at 3 years of age. She was sent off to Dublin to an aunt. And then she was sent off again. And then she was sent off to work to England for relatives at 14.
Oh,
and yeah. And that rankled with her for all of her life, actually, this whole being sent away thing, which has been very common up to really the last 20 years, 30 years. And for different reasons, people were sent away. So she had English on her side. And actually, in her trip to the UK when she was 14, her sister joined her soon after that. And her sister was with her then until she met and married Brendan about 8 years later. So she wasn't exactly on her own. However, Brendan left home when he was about 12 and a half because he'd really no interest in books. When it started, his parents got sick and somebody had to look after the farm. He also came from a very large family. 9 children, I think, and two parents. And they were Lán Gaelic, the house, it was all Irish. He went to work for a farmer in Ventry for a couple of years. And then he went to Donegal, where he still spoke Irish and started to learn a bit of English. But when he went across to Scotland at 16 and a half, he had to grow a beard in a field to make himself look older because he wasn't old enough to get the working man's card. But he had to start to learn some English then at that stage. So for him, it was a difficult transition. But for both of them on arriving in Birmingham, they both got jobs on the buses to begin with. And they had no, their accents were, you know, particularly for Brendan, he had a thick Kerry accent and nobody could understand him. And then, of course, people wanted to know directions all over Birmingham and they didn't know the names of the streets themselves. So that was fairly comical, I would say.
I can imagine. And then trying to also learn the English on top of that.
That's right.
How did Brendan find it? As you say, Mary obviously had the luxury of being able to speak the English and everything, but when Brendan headed off and basically it was like a new, it was a new, it is a new life.
Well, at that time there were about 50,000 Irish people a year going to Birmingham alone. And it's not as big a city as you might imagine. My co-author and I have visited a number of times and we can't get over how accessible and friendly, and to us it appears, you know, not that huge. So 50,000 Irish people every year for 10 years. So there were 500,000 Irish people in it by 1960. So Irish people clustered around churches, and then they tended to build dance halls alongside, the same thing that had been done in Ireland. And they formed what are called church clubs, and people socialised, revolved around meeting each other. You mixed with other Irish people, because of course there was initial, you know, people weren't wanting to mix that much. They felt they weren't wanted. And until people started to work and then to eventually buy a house and settle in, you know, it was, you were breaking into another community. You're absolutely right. It wasn't easy.
Mm. And tell us, without spoiling the memoir, how did Brendan and Mary cross paths?
Well, it was at one of these dances. Brendan was already starting to play football for the city transport team in Birmingham. He had played on the Dingle team, barefoot, football, junior team. He then played for Kerry, again on the junior team, but he got a pair of football boots from Paddy Bond Brosnan at that stage, and he played in a Munster quarter final. He's very proud of this, in County Clare, and got a medal for it against Clare in Tralee. And he had just played a game, and they were getting medals that night in this church hall. And he, as to quote himself, he put his eye on Mary.
And it was just history after that.
Well, exactly. They got married the same year.
Oh, wow.
He didn't let the grass grow under his feet.
Well, I suppose when you find her, you keep her.
There you have it.
So tell us a bit about Saturday when you had the launch, and more so about Brendan and Mary being there to hear their memoir. Why did he write a memoir about them and their story?
Well, what happened was my sister was working with their daughter in Jaguar Land Rover in the British Midlands. And she mentioned, Angela mentioned, that her dad always wanted to have his story told. And I love memoir. I think it, because I'm a bit of a vintage person, it brings me into my, back to my own childhood and so on. But that's really how it came about. We did a Zoom call with them and then came over and visited them, and what turned out to be a family history project. Then we thought, well, after spending, you know, a fair bit of work and so on and time, we said, well, look, we'll make a book out of this.
You come over, have a Zoom call, have a chat, and the next thing you know, you have the book launch. And tell us a bit about the people that came now on Saturday and how it was for Brendan and Mary.
Well, Brendan and Mary are both 90 years of age this year, but looking at them really and truly, they prove that age is but a number. Brendan was extremely dapper in one of his beautiful suits and his gold watch chain, and still has his black hair, and sharp as you like. He was correcting the speaker on the niceties of Kerry football in the 60s and 70s. And Mary was a usual, very vivacious self. They were thrilled to be there. And they've had a couple of health issues in the last couple of years, but I don't think anything would have stopped them coming over with their daughters and their partners for this moment of glory in the Café Littre, hosted by Shorsha Lewisa and Marie France.
And I suppose for them to actually have their story be told is not only just important for them and you, but for their daughters as well.
I would say so, yes, because it preserves a certain amount of, a huge amount of family history. It absolutely does. And I think, even outside of family history, social history, we're talking about ways of life that are nearly gone. You know, going around to a different house every night during the summer. And basically, the parish organizes their own party every night. This was called Bahán Tíocht, literally going house to house. And the musicians would play and there would be dancing and singing. And that was the way people socialized. And that's just one example of it. And Brendan catalogued a lot of those, and the missions, the stations, all of the customs that are, you know, dying out now.
Well, it's funny you say as well, both Brendan and Mary grew up in very small houses with very large families, which was, as a lot of our family history knows, that was very common. Whereas if you have three people in a house, everyone needs a room and everything. So we don't realise how lucky we are, you know, to grow up in a time where we have space.
Well, we certainly have more space. I'm not 100% sure that we're altogether more lucky than the freedom, the expansive countryside that our forebears had, or indeed that I had. You know, even living in the suburb of Cork City, we spent all our time playing outside with neighbours. And I'm not sure that happens so much now. Materially, we certainly, our children have a lot more. There's no doubt about that. But I'm not sure socially and all the things that brings to children developmentally. I think all the skills that they acquire from knowing so many more people. Okay, physically, they weren't as protected, but we weren't so aware of the dangers back then. There certainly were dangers, but...
What kind of strikes me more about the memoir is you said there about Brendan having to grow a beard at 16 and, you know, to try and get his working permit. Can you imagine telling a 16-year-old now, try and grow a beard because you're going off working for the summer over in Birmingham?
Indeed, indeed. Well, I think that's the whole thing about memoir, though. What is ordinary to one person or... you know, day to day or whatever, to another person, and partly because it's of another age, but it's wonderful, you know, and I think that's what memoir is all about, is seeing the extraordinary in the ordinary, because every single person's life has stuff in it that is extremely interesting to somebody else.
Mm. Maura, if people want to purchase the book and read it, where can they do so?
Okay, well, at the moment, we have been distributing it ourselves. It's in on Cafe Litera in Dingle. It's in Dingle Books. We're hoping to have it in the Blasket Centre. And it's actually also in Chapters Bookshop in Dublin. So we have to set our sights now on other shops around the country. But this is the way it's going. It's been an organic project from the start. And I suppose we're just finding our way and hoping there'll be enough interest in it for people to look for it. We have an email address, comealongway25@gmail.com, and if you drop us a line, we can send you a copy at €15, and I think it's €3 for the postage. All of the proceeds after our printing costs are going to the Irish Cancer Society and the Irish Birmingham Association, the Birmingham Irish Association. So they're the co-beneficiaries of the funds. I want to particularly thank Mike Gleeson, very well known in Killarney town, who gave a wonderful talk prior to the book launch in the Cafe Litera. And furthermore, of course, Shosho Luisa, who has, all I can say, is a treasure house of a shop, and he himself is a national treasure of Irish and literature and literature published in Irish, Gurmila Maggots.